right, welcome back. It's the Monday edition of Jeff and Erica. Glad to have you on board, wherever you are around the world. These things that are going on all around us are increasing. The tempo is picking up. The cadence is picking up. Can't give you figures exactly, but if you are in your town monitoring your Broadcastify paramedic dispatch frequencies, you'll know. You'll see. These things are going in surges now. And each week we find somebody else who has a list of 8 or 10 different people that they've known who are either dead or dying. And when people have been grievously injured by these DOD bioweapon injections, they're dying. They're not going to come back. I hate to say that. We're just not seeing it. It's not happening. And there are several dozen ways, directly or indirectly, that these wicked, vicious bioweapon injections can lead to death and do lead to death. You've got the heart attack. You've got clots. You've got strokes. You've got brain, CJD, prion brain disease. You've got the war on the bloodstream, the blood. You have these S proteins, the spike, going into the neurology in the body. You name it. Wherever the blood goes, it takes spike protein with it. And wherever the spike protein goes, you have microclotting and worse. All right? And do remember that when a regular blood clot in your body is formed, it's blood. It's not these amyloid clots. You all know that by now, so I won't go further into that. But there are so many different ways that this can kill people. It's not funny. There's not a single way to cure this. It never will be. It wasn't designed to do that. It's designed to have multiple fail-safes, so the end result is going to be the same. Grievous injuries, wounded for life, taken out of the game of life. No more work, no more play, you're home, you're being taken care of. By whom? By another human, or two, or three. Around the clock in many cases. What does that mean? So one person is taken out of the game with these shots. That means three others potentially will be taken out of the game with the shots as well. Not only will they be around someone who is exuding spike protein and mRNA and God only knows what else and picking it up, but they will no longer be able to work a normal life's job, regimen, take care of family, because they're trying to take care of this loved one, relative, or friend who needs the help. So this is diabolical and then some. Erica, are you there, kiddo?
I'm here, Jeff.
I am here, Jeff. Four words. I said 300 and I get four back. All right.
Anyhow. I'm listening intently.
Oh, yes. Now, anything you want to add to that? Because it's too big to cover. That was just a smattering of it. What did I miss? And I did miss intentionally the iron. So when I said attack on the blood, I'm leaving that door. That's yours. Go through it.
Well, yeah, the spike protein is a metabolic toxin in and of itself, whether it's attached to a virus, or whether it comes in through a needle, or whether you inhale it or ingest it, it's a metabolic toxin. And it can do a range of different damages. Starting with the blood, I would say, but you know, wherever it goes, it wreaks havoc. So it can disrupt all kinds of normal metabolic processes. So it throws you out of homeostasis. It's extremely allergenic and inflammatory. So just having it present is going to irritate the body, irritate the immune system, and begin a cascade of inflammatory responses that you know, depending on where it is and the damage that he's doing, it could actually destroy that tissue.
Do we put it on top of the heap? It's the iron, stupid. Is that what we do?
That's a big part of it, no question. The dysregulation of the iron
explain that briefly. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, so the spike protein can damage the red blood cell and cause it to break apart, which would release its iron. And having free iron, unbound iron, circulating in the body is always dangerous because iron is reactive. It's a redox metal, so it can gain and lose electrons and do a lot of damage in the process. That needs to be a process that's tightly controlled. And the body does that by attaching it to certain proteins to keep it from being too reactive on its own. So you start there, and then, as we've talked about before, there are sequences in it that cause it to act like a hepcidin mimetic, meaning it mimics the same action as hepcidin in the body. And hepcidin is the master regulator of iron homeostasis, how much you absorb, how much is retained in the tissues, how much gets released. That's critical.
Homeostasis, so, meaning balance.
Balance, equilibrium, yes. So it's disruptive in that way. And that's not insignificant because having free iron in the body allows it to generate free radicals. And free radicals will damage cell membranes, nucleotides, your DNA, proteins. So you would age quite a bit faster if you have problems with iron.
Iron is bad news when it's running loose in your system. Bad.
Well,
so
at the
is
same
heme.
Time...
So is hemoglobin.
Yeah, well, the components that make up a red blood cell, heme, and then you've got the globin, which is the protein, but heme is responsible for binding to the iron that allows iron to capture oxygen and then release it. So when the red blood cells are getting destroyed, of course, the body wants to rebuild them so that it can sufficiently oxygenate itself and also have it to perform oxidative functions like detoxification. There's a signal to rebuild it, but the spike protein also interferes with that. That's called the heme synthesis pathway. So the having the spike protein present along this pathway is just devastating. And I assume, I presume this has a lot to do with these bleeding disorders that we're seeing in women, because heme is a signaling molecule, and it is involved in maintaining the integrity of the uterine lining. It's critical for the maintenance of a pregnancy. It does interact with estrogen. So there's some tie-in with the hormonal aspects of female reproduction. And, you know, what those are exactly, I don't know. Right. I assume somebody knows.
Yeah. All right, just to wrap this up, the other aspect, one of the key aspects of these injections, the DOD, bioweapon injections, is to cut the birth rate drastically by sterilizing males and females, beginning with children. Starting
yep.
early. They're to the point now where I hardly see any babies anymore. 75% of pregnant women who have gotten a shot have lost their child. And those that actually end up being live birth children, who knows what's going to happen to them in a year or two or less? We don't know. This is all happening in real time. All right. Now, shedding. Crucial part of their entire formula of success was shedding. They didn't talk about this in the beginning. They knew damn well what they were doing, and they built this horrible weapon so it would be transmissible. No question. We knew early on, and we've been saying this for over a year now, that the spike protein is being shed. And if you're around someone who's exhaling it, you're going to pick it up. Now we know that if you're around someone, you touch them, you can pick it up, shake their hand, give them a hug, whatever. We think they may even be available on fomites for a short period of time. All right? Now, the other half of that is the mRNA. Would we call it a capsid? Is that fair? What do we call it? The lipid-bound, the lipid-wrapped mRNA, what do we want to call it? a thing.
It's
what
a
is it?
Lipid nanoparticle.
All right, a lipid nanoparticle.
Or an exosome.
Okay. The mRNA portion with the LNP wrapping is also being spread through shedding. What does that mean? That means you are getting an injection. Theoretically, the only way you can get mRNA is through an injection, through a needle, into your deltoid muscle, and no, it doesn't stay there. It takes right off and goes all around the body. They knew this. They knew all of this. People like Fauci. I would suggest people like Malone, who's bragged so much about his friends in the deep state and the intel community. They know what's going on with this. They're not stupid people. So we've got two things, the spike protein being shed and the mRNA being shed. And how do we know about the mRNA? We speculated on that some, I don't know how many months ago, that that might also be coming along. And I always felt that if they could do it, they'll do it. This is a depopulation genocide program. So now we have proof. We have data, and Peter McCullough has been presenting it. And we're going to play a video right now. It's short. We did this before. I'm doing it again because it is worth repeating. And I want you all to listen. Keep this in mind. You ready? Do you want to say anything else?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
What are the risks to the unvaccinated?
You know, there was a recent paper. I just have it on my Substack. If you want to review it, if you go to the Courageous Discourse Substack. And the first author is Helene Benoon, a former INSERM scientist. INSERM is a leading research unit in France. And Benoon has summarized this. This is disturbing. It looks like the messenger RNA is transferring from the vaccinated to the unvaccinated now. And in a paper by Fertig and colleagues, the messenger RNA is found circulating in blood for at least 2 weeks, and the curves were not going down. That's as long as they looked. Rolkin and colleagues has found messenger RNA in the vaccinated in lymph nodes for months. It looks like the body's not clearing it out. And then a recent paper, this is the most disturbing, from Hannah and colleagues, JAMA, showed that the messenger RNA is in the breast milk of yes. women ill-advised who took the vaccine during pregnancy or afterwards. So it's now clear, I think, the messenger RNA, that's the greatest concern, is could you actually take a vaccine inadvertently by close contact, kissing, sexual contact, breastfeeding? And it looks like the answer is yes. Now the question on the table is, how long do you wait for contact? No one knows. The vaccines, the messenger RNA vaccines for short, they've never been demonstrated to actually leave the body. They look like they're permanent, as well as the spike protein that's produced after them. This is very disturbing. So it's hard to guide. I was saying, you know, 30 days refrain from kissing and sexual contact with a vaccinated person, but I'm now extending that to at least 90 days and conservatively maybe extended from a point forward. I know there's married couples and all kinds of personal implications there, but no, this messenger RNA looks like it's for keep. Every shot is accumulating in the body with no ability for the body to get rid
to
of
remove it.
The vaccines, because they stay in the body so long, it looks like they do permanently install into the human genome through what we call, it's called reverse transcription. So this is disturbing. That not only does the vaccines not get out of the body, but now they're changing the human genome. This is shown in a human hepatoma cell line. And so it's conceivable that two vaccinated people could actually pass the code for Pfizer or Moderna into the baby permanently. The government, as they developed these vaccines, they kind of rushed it through the final stages. There was no assurances that these were safe. There was no genotoxicity, no teratogenicity studies. Now to learn, and in autopsy studies, the spike protein produced from the genetic material is found in the heart. Bohmeyer and colleagues have shown it. It's found in the brain.
Yeah.
Found in the brain, Mora and colleagues. So I can tell you, everyone who's taken the vaccine has this material in their brain, their heart, their adrenal glands, reproductive organs. It's really a terrible thought. My heart goes out to people who have taken the vaccine.
Yeah.
13 to 14 billion injections of this crap into at least 5 billion people on the planet. And you think that's going to go away, dear friends? This is for keeps. This is a mass depopulation of the planet. The real big questions are why? What's the purpose? But back to the issue of transmission from person to person of spike protein and mRNA and the LNP that goes with it, and God knows what else is in there, we don't know. It's crazy. And it's going to get nothing but worse. Now, here's just a little shorty. This is a little piece, in case you missed it, of Dr. Aleem. I'm going to play this again. So here we go.
Although we are non-vaccinated.
I'm going to make you sick. The coronavirus, so-called COVID-19 virus, for the most part, is pretty harmless. I mean, we can get into a lot of details about it, but what we found out over the last year or so is that there's a 99% recovery rate from the viral infection. Now, the people who have severe illness from the viral infection, what causes those symptoms is the S protein, the spike protein that's on the outside of the virus. And it's that spike protein that adheres to the ACE2 receptors. So what I'm saying is that even the people who got sick from the COVID-19 virus itself, the part of the virus that made them sick was the S protein. So now, the people who got vaccinated, every cell in their body is now manufacturing the S protein.
Because of the mRNA, which is the factory and the instructions that takes over your human cell that it enters, and it reprograms that cellular DNA to produce the spike protein.
In the beginning, I had it wrong. I thought it was necessary for them to manufacture the whole virus in their body. I didn't understand that all of the pathophysiology was caused by the spike protein. So all of the vaccinated people are manufacturing billions, trillions of copies of this S protein.
Okay, the whole Dr. Aleem, A-L-I-M, video is up there on the right side of the homepage. You all know where to look for it. It's there. And shedding is now showing that the S protein, the spike, and the mRNA are being transmitted from the vaxxed to the unvaxxed. You stand next to somebody who's been vaxxed and you breathe in their exhalations, you're going to get spike and or mRNA. You touch them, you're going to get spike and or mRNA. You can't deny that. Now, we've got the data. So they made this with that in mind. They made this because they knew they were announcing they were going to try and get 80% vaccinated. And I said immediately to myself, what the hell about what? 20% you're just going to ignore? No. They built in a mechanism to spread it. Very simple. It's called shedding.
And we had the evidence for that last year.
We've been at this a long time. And again, I'm not tooting our horn here, but for those of you who have been with us, you know how long ago you heard these kinds of things. Right here. And it's amazing to see it finally getting out onto a mainstream platform like Dr. Drew. Who's Dr. Drew? Tell us who Dr. Drew is, or I'm going to roll Ryan.
He's a mainstream media doc.
Who got shot up,
I'm
didn't
not
he?
That what's that?
Didn't he get shot up?
Yes, he did. I don't know how many he got, but he did have an adverse event from the shot that he took. It was some kind of clot in his, it was under his eye, blood clot.
It looked like a hematoma under his eye.
Yeah. But he is a major MSM, mainstream media doc, and you know, the fact that he interviewed Ryan Cole at length on his platform is, I think, a turning point. Because, you know, this is now going to start to trickle into the mainstream media disciples' consciousness to some degree.
We'll see. Question
yeah,
is,
we'll
who
see.
Let Ryan Cole loose?
Right.
That's the question. Did they make the decision? Right, we got 13 to 14 billion injections out there. People are taking the bivalent booster. We're in good shape. So let's let him talk. We'll confuse the hell out of people even more, which is what they've done brilliantly. So here's the Ryan Cole appearance, part of it, on Dr. Drew. That's D-R-E-W.
All right. But if we summarize so far, and I'm going to, part of my job is to make sure that we don't get so far into the...
And that's Dr. Kelly Victory. She's a co-host.
Technical weeds to lose those folks who don't have science backgrounds. But so far we said we knew that COVID was associated with this spike protein that by itself is toxic. It is what caused clots in those people who contracted COVID and had clots. They develop a vaccine that induces you to produce those precise toxic spike proteins and with no off switch. Unlike when you get the virus and you will eliminate it with a vaccine, you now have the genetic roadmap or instruction manual to make these in perpetuity, perhaps. We don't know for how long because those studies were never done. So when you get vaccinated, okay. You now are going to produce the toxic spikes. And furthermore, they're going to be produced in essentially every organ system in the body, despite what we were told. They won't stay in the deltoid. Furthermore, because of the nature of the stains that you used that were available, you were able to determine the difference between spike proteins that occurred from the virus versus spike proteins that occurred from the vaccine.
We also think that it is possible that the mRNA may be self-replicatable. And if it is, that is where it's coming from vis-a-vis shedding. It's replicating. So your body's dumping some of it off, just like it is with the spike protein. Now, this is interesting what Dr. Victory just said, that Dr. Cole knows that the spike protein from the original Wuhan strain is different, apparently, than the synthetic spike protein that was put into the Department of Defense ordered vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer. And remember, Pfizer has one-third the amount of mRNA as the Moderna has. It's got three times as much. So they're not equal. They're both deadly equal, but they have different amounts of mRNA. Add anything to that?
Well, I think they're making the distinction not necessarily that the spike in the vaccine is different than the one on the virus. I think they're making the distinction that they can tell that the spike they're finding in these deceased victims came from the vaccine because there's no other components of the virus
in their
tissues.
Got it.
In other words, there's no nucleocapsid, there's no envelope protein, there's none of these other proteins that comprise the virus, just the spike protein. So therefore, they're able to determine that this is a vax injury as opposed to a viral infection.
Good. Well said. Here we go. Dr. Ryan Cole.
And to differentiate.
Right.
So far, you now have become, if you're vaccinated, you're now a little factory producing gobs of toxic proteins in every organ system in the body. Go from there.
And I want to clarify to just take some fear away from some individuals. The vector with the J&J and the AstraZeneca is an adenoviral vector, and you're starting with complementary DNA, not an mRNA. And so because of that, you don't get the breakdown. It produces a high amount of spike for a set period of time. We know from the 1980s, 90s, that gene-based studies with adenoviral vectors caused a lot of clotting. So there were clotting problems with that one for sure, and some antibodies in the blood that also induce clotting, platelet factor 4, antiphospholipid antibodies, other things in the body that will induce clotting from that vector. But you don't get the replication for the same period of time with mRNA vaccines.
Right.
I had some sort of...
I don't know if it was thrombotic thrombocytopenic purpura or what. I had all the signs of a transverse sinus thrombosis. I woke up with a raccoon's eye and was sick as hell.
I saw that.
And made it through. But that's what you're talking about. So there it is. There's my raccoon eye.
Yeah.
So keep going, Dr. Fuller.
Move us forward.
Yeah. Now, we'll move forward real quickly here, and I won't be too nerdy. I'll try to be a little more layman's here. So if we jump onto the – yeah, there we go. So it's in the brain tissue. Dr. Drew had a great question.
If you look under guests, you will find this video and the Dr. Peter McCullough video, and you can look at the slides that he's calling up now and pointing to. They're very informative.
Is it in the gray matter? Is it in the white matter? Where in the brain? Wherever the lipid nanoparticle distributes, and it does get through the blood-brain barrier, and we know S1, the spike gets through as well. So it'll follow the small capillaries and leak into whatever tissue it wants to. Okay, next slide, please. Now, this is the aorta. This is something that's unusual. Usually you'll see this in genetic conditions where the aorta ruptures. And you can see on the top, that's the autopsy tissue. On the bottom, all those dots, that's inflammation. On the right, that's spike protein, literally causing the lymphocytes to chew a hole in the aorta. This is the biggest blood vessel in your body coming off your heart. When that ruptures, you're gone in minutes. So that's just another example of what deposited spike protein and the induced inflammation can do. So next, please. This is just an example of how prolific the spike can become once it lands in a tissue. So that big circle in the middle is an artery inside your spleen. And all those brown dots and all those splenic cells, that's a lot of spike protein.
The slide itself shows to be at least 60% brown spots, maybe 70%. And the blood vessel is a circle in the center with a floating spike in it. The spike is everywhere. It has proliferated. It has taken up residence in this tissue, spleen tissue, and it'll do the same thing in your brain. You're not going to get this out of the human body, Erica. No way. Look at this.
Oh, I know. It's just saturated.
It's almost the predominant tissue. It's that big.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
So we know the spike can circulate in the body for a long time. Traditionally, in vaccine injury from other shots, they say most injury occurs within 2 weeks. However, with these gene-based injections, the spike is persisting for a long time, and it's produced in large quantity. Dr. Ogata at Harvard showed it was circulating for a month. Dr. Bonsall in the Journal of Immunology showed it was circulating in exosomes in the blood for up to 4 months. So we have spike protein persisting in the human body for a long time. Now, in some immune-suppressed patients, virus persists for a long time as well. So I'm not throwing one or the other under the bus. I'm just saying this is a scientific observation. So going on to the next one. This is what's concerning. Okay, so this is a lymphoma, a cancer of the lymphoid cells within the stomach lining. Now let's look at the next slide. All of those B cells are stuffed with spike protein. The spike protein binds to a gene in our body that's called the guardian of the genome, the P53 tumor suppressor gene. We know from in silico studies that the spike will bind there.
P53 tumor suppressor gene. Erica.
Yeah, that's critical for controlling for cancer. And there are other viruses that will bind to that as part of their defense against the immune system. But when they do, I mean, human papillomavirus is one of them, and the high-risk types that are known to cause cervical cancer bind very tightly to that P53. And that is one reason why some viruses are associated with cancer, for how they interact with these proteins in the cell that control for cancer. P53 is a big one.
Okay.
It also binds to a breast cancer gene known as BRCA and ovarian cancer gene known as BRCA. What does that mean? Well, I've made the observation that there's an uptick of some unusual cancers that I've been seeing. But this, I think, is
This should just at least open the door to other pathologists and universities to say, well, we should maybe go back and look at some of these unusual fast-spreading cancers in young patients that we normally don't see. Is there spike protein? Is it binding to that receptor? Why is the body doing things that we haven't seen on a population level before? So
we found also evidence that herpes zoster, now that's a common thing, people get zoster outbreaks when their immune system begins to fail. If they have herpes zoster, it will break out. Lesions. They have found in lesions spike proteins, lots and lots of spike proteins. Very interesting. Now, the P53, when that's gone, one of your main defenses against cancer breaking out in your body is gone. And I do want to remind you again that many, many people who suddenly are showing up with new cancer or dramatically reactivated cancers that are in stage 4 upon diagnosis are evidence of the damage being done to the P53 and other normal inhibitors in your body. This cancer has just gone crazy. Stage 4 on diagnosis. This is astonishing. I can't even imagine what oncology is talking about, if they're talking about this much at all.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, go ahead.
Again, I'm just putting it out there. These are things that are scientific, have been observed. These are observations. These are scientific methods. Others need to continue to repeat these.
Hey, and let me interject here with if I can interject for a second here with regard to these cancers, Dr. Cole, you are certainly not the only one seeing these. There's been a significant increase in new onset cancers, particularly in young people, and a resurgence of cancers that had been deemed in remission. There was just a letter, a very compelling letter written to the British Medical Journal by a well-known British oncologist named Angus Dalgleish, who wrote that he said, please stop these. We are seeing this massive uptick in colorectal cancers and in 44 other classes of cancers, particularly in young people. So,
Erica, 44 different classes of cancer.
I know, it's just staggering.
What did Dr. Oh, we're going to have cancers we don't even have names for.
Blaylock.
Russell Blaylock, I don't think this is a surprise to him at all, but he said much the same thing. We're going to see cancers we've never seen before. We're going to see cancers we don't even have names for. And that's exactly precisely what's going on.
Some explanation. And while you and I cannot say with surety as we sit here today that these are a direct result of COVID vaccination, we certainly are obligated, I think, to have that robust, vigorous debate. And somebody
Erica, do we need a robust, vigorous debate?
I don't think we have time for that.
The horses are out of the barn and gone.
That's absurd.
That is absolutely, it's pathetically, laughably absurd. I'm going to try and move this ahead a little.
Sex should be in the
mechanisms that the spike can induce in those cancer.
As we sit here today, that these are a direct result of COVID vaccination, we certainly are obligated, I think, to have that robust, vigorous debate. And somebody sure as heck should be investigating these and saying what's causing it. Because the things you are bringing up with regard to the binding of the spikes to these different receptors on certain well-known means. One of the great advances in cancer was our ability to define receptors and therefore have targeted.
We're so far beyond a robust and vigorous debate. It's not funny. This is ridiculous.
Yeah. That's a stall tactic.
Mechanisms that the spike can induce in those cancer pathways. And that's, you know, my scientific question and concern, what I've been observing. T-cell suppression, your immune system keeps cancer in check. All of us have some atypical cells right now. Your immune system knocked them out. Interferon is critical for fighting off other viruses as well as for fighting off cancer, especially type 1 interferon. The spike protein suppresses that in our cells. The spike.
Credit where credit's due. The first person I ever heard say that interferon is a key to this whole puzzle was the young lady on the other microphone. And she deserves a lot of credit for that. This was at least a year ago. So there.
Yep.
Congratulations.
Protein damages our mitochondria. It can get into the mitochondria and inhibit the breathing of your cell, the energy of your cell, the ATP. So every cell in your body has these little factories making energy for you all day long. The spike protein impedes that. Great papers by Dr. Clough and Abramovich. So, and those are the tip of the iceberg. And then certainly microclotting, you know, can cause choking off of tissues and cancers do like...
Microclotting does cause the choking off and death of cells all over the body, in the brain, in your little toe. All right? And if the microclots develop any robust abilities, your toes will turn black. You'll have necrotic toes, and you'll have to snip them off, etc.
Oxygen-depleted environment. So there, and I could, you know, I won't get into the weeds on it. That could be another long, long lecture. But you're right. It's all these things added up into one that it's all of a sudden with what's new. Well, there's a new product that's never been used on humanity before that has plenty of plausible mechanisms, plenty of proven mechanisms, and yet the scientific questioning, the endeavor to say, hey, there's a signal. We need to look into the signal. We need to fund this.
Well, just for me, out of curiosity, what the tumors you've been seeing? What was it, like a Burkitt's or something?
No, interestingly, and there is an increase of Epstein-Barr virus, both after COVID and after, and Burkitt's is driven by Epstein-Barr virus. That's a B-cell lymphoma that tends to be driven by Epstein-Barr virus. And interestingly, and about half of the long-haul patients and COVID vaccine-injured patients, they do have reactivated Epstein-Barr virus. So I encourage clinicians, whenever they have that fatigued patient post-vaccine or post-COVID, check Epstein-Barr virus titers to see if it's reactivated. My first signal was in women's health. I saw an uptick in endometrial cancers. That was the one that first concerned me. And then I do a lot of skin pathology, and so melanoma in a lot younger patients. And what was fascinating, especially after shot 2 or 3, was the activity of growth of the tumor. So we measure how the cells are dividing and at what rate. And it was dividing at, these tumors were dividing at far higher rates. I've been doing this for 26 years. I've seen 500,000 patients in my career. You kind of know the patterns. And when you see something different, you're like, gosh, that is a lot of cell activity in this tumor compared to what I've been seeing. And it's in like Dr. Victory said, in younger cohorts. And that becomes a concern as well. So again, I'm not throwing anyone under the bus, but this is an industry that has something new. And this, all of these things are the kind of things we should have done long before a rollout of something experimental on a large population.
All right, so I keep throwing you off the blood clot. So back to the clots.
No, let's get to the clots. No. I'm more freeform like this. So, I mean, I can get on stage and do a presentation, but we can jump a couple slides forward. Let's look at those clots because, you know, there's been some sensational videos, and unfortunately, I didn't have any editorial power and didn't know I was going to be in one. I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, here we are. And so I can dispel some of the controversy if I can. So, yeah, let's go ahead and jump a slide or two, Caleb. Here we are. So people say, oh, you know, these clots aren't real, you know, that's all made up, whatever. People are confabulating. These are from living patients. So these patients, fortunately, are still with us. So I have some surgical colleagues around the country that have seen an increase in their patients, thankfully done the scans, found them, and extracted them. So these thick fibrous clots are in vivo as well. These are in living patients. The interesting tube of blood on the right, this was a patient from my colleague, Dr. Burkhardt in Germany, and she had 3 shots. Whenever it would get cold, her fingers would start to hurt, kind of a Raynaud's phenomenon. They took a tube of blood, set it on the counter, and little fibrils started to form. They spun it down, and the material within this spun down big nugget there is the same as what we're seeing in the clots. So we'll go slide forward. And this is what it looks like. It looks like just this pink amorphous material. Well, that's fibrin, it's reticulin, it's a bunch of amino acids. But more importantly, there's a material that the body doesn't break down very easily called amyloid. And you may hear about amyloid in Alzheimer's disease and plaques and the neurons in the brain. That's what we call a beta-pleated sheet amyloid. There are different types of amyloid. But the problem is the body doesn't easily break down amyloid. Our body can break down fibrin and clots, and you'll form a clot after scraping your arm or knee or whatever, and eventually your body remodels that area. And because we have enzymes that say, hey, you know, there's a clot, it's in the way, let's remold it, put some new vessels in, you know, all done, good to go. However, this type of proteinaceous material doesn't get broken down easily by the body. I don't want to scare everybody and say, gosh, everybody that has, you know, the shot is going to have this. No. No, the good news is most people are fine.
He can't really say that, Erica, with any absolute certainty. We don't know yet that people who have gotten 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 shots aren't already building amyloid clots, fibrils from the spike.
I think any number of things can be in progress. Certainly
and
cancer,
certainly
neurodegeneration. I mean, some of these traditionally have long lag times from the initial insult. I mean, Alzheimer's can be 25 years under normal circumstances before the disease actually manifests. I wouldn't say people are out of the woods because they're symptom-free at the moment, unfortunately.
Correct.
I mean, this is
how do you know if you have
profound damage has been done on a genetic level and just in terms of protein homeostasis, which means your body's ability to regulate protein production and direct it for its various needs and the timing of those needs. The homeostasis is really in peril. And then if you add the iron component on top of it, there's organs that are being starved of oxygen. Then there's other organs that are being fried from oxidative stress.
The iron can literally fry the fat or the liquid nano part.
Well, you have fats, delicate fats in your cell membranes that can be oxidized by free radicals that are generated from iron that's being sequestered in the cell. And then that is one thing that happens when there's inflammation present and this spike protein that's acting like hepcidin. It will keep iron sequestered in tissues as a defense mechanism. The purpose of that is to withhold iron from invading microbes. So this increase in inflammation is the body's signal that, uh-oh, something's trying to invade. And microbes need iron to proliferate. Cancer needs iron to proliferate. And when you've got iron sequestered in high amounts in organs and tissues, that is a risk factor for cancer.
Okay, very good. Sure is.
Ever, from a scientific point of view, you can't find what you don't look for. So early on, the agencies and Fauci encouraged people not to do autopsies. So you're not going to find if you're not looking. The morticians that started seeing these, they were getting, when a body comes in and they have to preserve it, they cannulate large vessels, they put their needles in large vessels, they started getting back pressure that they hadn't experienced before. And there are one or two that have spoken out, but I know of about another 50 that are seeing the same, but again, want to keep their jobs. So they don't say anything. But when we look at these clots under the microscope, this is what we see. We'll go another slide forward here. Now, this is interesting. So here's autopsy tissue. This is a thicker clot within a larger lung vessel. And all that brown in the middle, guess what's in the middle of that? Spike protein. And again, it's binding to those little receptors we talked about. And Dr. Pretorius did a brilliant study where, the one from Dr. Raisa Pretorius, South Africa, where she showed that you can take the platelets out of the blood and put the spike protein in, and it will cause proteins to clump together in the absence of platelets. So this is really unusual in clotting mechanisms. I ran one of the busiest clotting clinics in the world at the Mayo Clinic for a long time, and just understanding all the factors that go in to form a clot, to see something like this in a protein that will do this in the absence of other things that are usually necessary for a clot is very unusual and, again, concerning. Do I want to alarm people? No, I don't want to alarm people. Do I want people to be aware? Do I want my colleagues around the world to study this? Absolutely. So we'll go on to the next one here. This is just an example of the postmortem clots. And yes, they're long and they're very fibrous. And that fibrous aspect of them, there's no, you know, nano tips and wires and all this crazy stuff you hear on the internet. I think that's just all tinfoil scaremongering. But what there is unusual amounts of collected proteins. There are unusual combinations of proteins that make these very difficult for the body to dissolve.
Okay, I hope you caught that. He pretty well disposed of all the bullshit that's been thrown at us, self-assembling nanowires and biological AI parasites, graphene oxide. It's all crap. It's lies. It's disinformation. They're not needed. They don't do what they're claiming they do. We just had an explanation right here of the major part of what the spike does to the blood, for example. And yet, Ryan, in this interview, and you can listen to the rest of it, does not go into the fact that the spike protein breaks the red blood cells down and the iron goes running off unbound. The heme is unbound. There's no longer a red blood cell to carry oxygen and deliver it, and the blood of the vaxxed is usually damn near black because it has no oxygen or hemoglobin left in it. Just a mess. It's a mess.
It sure is, and they're not treating that. You heard Nurse Ann. They are not treating the blood, and they could be, but they're not.
It's not in the protocol. Mm-hmm. People are supposed to die, and people are supposed to make the various testing and big pharma and professional healthcare industries like hospitals and clinics make them wealthy. They're killing off the people on this planet and making a fortune doing it.
Yeah.
All right. That's all I'm going to play for this. I just wanted to make sure everybody got a good listen to it, and hopefully it'll stick to a degree. But do remember, the spike protein and the mRNA are being shed. You cannot, and I it grieves me to say this during the Christmas season. I love the Christmas holidays. But you cannot sit down at a table with mixed, vaxxed people and come away with anything but potential tragedy.
Yeah, there's many, many examples of that.
Okay, we have about a minute left. Anything we can add here that you're the professional?
Gosh, I don't know. It feels like we're beating a dead horse at this point. But
well,
it is real. It is real.
And it's not going away.
No, and I think now we're being confronted with this RSV thing. A lot of people coming down with that. and flu mm-hmm. on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they will be pushing vaccines for both of those. They're both in their so-called clinical trials at the moment.
And they'll be mRNA predicated.
Yes, they're both mRNA, yeah.
I think most of you who have your eyes open and your ears open see where this is going. It's all being done with the utmost of planning and intent, and they are doing it. And if you think the people are going
to
wake up,
no. Well, the interesting thing is that the staggering number of people that are injured and are suffering the consequences of these things, and they're not making the connection to them. That's just mind-boggling.
How can that be?
Well, they number one believe that they are traditional vaccines, that there was no risk, they were fine immediately afterwards, and in some cases it's been several months since they took the injections. And they're still, many of them are still frightened of getting COVID, so they will continue to get boosters. I see that a lot. Even despite the fact that many are injured.
You saw that, didn't you? They're recommending now every 8 weeks to get a bivalent booster.
Yep. And people will do it to feel safe.
It's going to be a tough Christmas for a lot of people. You're going to have to make decisions, and you're going to have to stick to them. And you have our extreme concern and well wishes. This is not a good time. This is an unprecedented time in human history on this planet. This cycle, and as you know, I believe that we've done this before as a humanoid species countless times, perhaps, in the 4.5 billion years this planet's been here. So we don't seem to learn. Maybe it's, as Erica said, something in the genetics. What happens when lemmings get to be too plentiful? There's too many of them for the landscape, the geology, the geography to support. They run over the cliff. What happens to bees when the beehives get to be too full? They split off. Half the hive goes away, goes somewhere else. Give us your theory. This is fascinating.
I think it's written into the DNA somehow that if we get to a certain point of degeneration in a broad sense, not just physical, but, you know, morally, ethically, mentally.
Spiritually.
There's a kill switch. And I think we're there. We're just doing ourselves in.
We're sure as hell allowing ourselves.
We have to find a way to set the reset button. Because this can't keep going. This is untenable.
Okay. I think that's it for tonight. We'll be back Wednesday. We have a whole lot of material for you Wednesday night, which we will be presenting and keeping you up to date. And if you want to hear the programs, don't try and repeat them to people who are sitting on the fence. It won't do much good. You can certainly give them the program. It'll be up on the right-hand side. All of our programs are up there for you. No charge. We just want you to spread the information. We don't claim to have all the answers, but we have quite a few. We've been able to connect a lot of very interesting things. And this is really evil. Evil stuff.
Yeah, it is.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Talk soon. Take care.
Okay, Jeff. My pleasure. Good night, everyone.
Right. Okay, we'll be back with Mitchell Henderson coming up next. Stay with us.